1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. Brigadier General Ger Ahern, retired Brigadier, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. Have you read the article by Commandant retired Cathal Berry in today's Irish Times?
Yes, I've read the articles and I know Cathal well.
What do you think of low pay and morale forcing soldiers to quit? The Defence Forces being completely dismantled, demoralised, betrayed. Senior officials in the Department of Defence wield disproportionate power. The list is endless. Probably the most excoriating piece ever written about the Army. Ger, would you agree with Commandant Berry?
I would absolutely agree with every syllable and sentence that's in Cahill's article. The Defence Forces is disintegrating, unfortunately, and it's disintegrating because of political neglect and the strangulation of the oversight of the Department of Defence.
Our national army is disintegrating.
In my opinion, yes. I mean, there are international benchmarks in terms of rotation of staff, leakages of personnel. For instance, in the United Kingdom, in the British Army, if you have a turnover of 5%, they declare a crisis. We have been turning over 10% every year for the last 7-8 years. And in the naval service, we're turning over 20%. Ships can't go to sea. Aircraft can't fly in the Air Corps. And army units are not operationally viable.
And the other point that Commandant Berry made, and he was 23 years in the army, and I know you served a long, long time in the army, including commanding the Defence Forces in Mogadishu. But the other point that Cathal Berry makes is, one, that 84% of soldiers are on below what is the national average wage. The pay restoration, he says, would work out at €350 a year, less than €1 a week before tax. Is the issue simply money, Ger?
Paying conditions are a serious issue. Mm-hmm. Retention is an absolutely monumental challenge. But conditions of service and the overall governance of the Defence Forces, and I would say one of the biggest challenges has been is that, and it's not a recent phenomenon, the Department of Defence has been operating without credible political oversight for decades. And because the Secretary General of the Department of Defence is the accounting officer for the two defence votes, vote 35 and 36, then the Chief of Staff of the Defence Forces, Vice Admiral Mark Mellett, and his predecessors have no control of operational budgets. If you contrast that with the Garda Commissioner, Drew Harris, he is the accounting officer for the operational budget of the Garda Síochána Síochána. So therefore, if you don't control the money, you can control the recruiting. You know, it must be remembered, Joe, that the people who are responsible for strategic HR in the Defence Forces is not the military, it is the Department of Defence. And remember, in the last 3-4 years, in excess of $20 million a year has been handed back to the Exchequer by the Department of Defence. It's absolutely scandalous.
That is jaw-dropping, that is, given the situation that the Defence Forces are in, as described by yourself, Brigadier General Ahern, and I've other people I'm going to bring in a sec, but I want to go to Anne first. 51551 joe@rt.ie. Anne, you say you're from an army family. Did you read Cathal Berry's piece with Conor Lally in today's Irish Times?
No, I only heard it on the radio this morning.
Okay, well, that's
at 8 o'clock.
Yeah. And you heard Cathal was on as well. What did you think of what he was saying? The demoralisation. Brigadier General Ahern has just added the word disintegration to what's happening in our army, which must mean there's a crisis.
Oh, there is. Listen, Joe, 2 weeks ago, I was losing my cool when they had the guards on. Mm. I didn't want to talk then. But the morale of the army is gone. So low. And you're talking about money there. They gave back money. For what? Why didn't they keep the money? They gave back, was it 97 million?
Well, 20 million each year, yeah.
Yeah.
The Department of Defence were are contesting that. But anyway, what's your experience of pay in the army?
Oh, it's very bad. Well, they're the lowest paid in this public sector. I mean, their increases, when they meant to get an increase, and it turned out to be €1 a week. A week. I mean, I have a son trying to save to get a house. Uh-huh. And my husband was in the army as well. And a lot, he said a lot has changed. He can see the difference as well. My husband can see the difference in it as well. I mean, he's 20 years out of the army. But the morale... You see, I can't understand. Why don't you pay the army a proper wage? Because when something goes wrong in the country, who do you fall back on? The army. When it snows, when the fire brigade goes on strike, the guards, anybody can go on strike.
Gorse fires in Donegal.
Yeah. Who do they fall back on? The army. And yes, they won't pay them a wage. The morale, I believe that the commandant that stepped down, he said the morale was so low. It was. He's a doctor, isn't he? A former doctor.
No, he stood incredibly, and to his credit, when he was in the army, he took 5 years off at his own expense and studied
to
be a doctor. Incredible.
That's right. Yeah.
Incredible.
Oh, yeah. No, he's an out-and-out soldier. Yes, that's what I call a true soldier.
Well, now now he's an out soldier. He's gone.
I know. That's sad. I believe he's not the only one. All they can't afford to stay on, Joe. My son is just hanging on, and he's hoping. He's just hoping things will change. You know, and the morale and pick up. I mean, even the conditions where they are in the barracks. There's pigeons, there's no hot water to get a shower. If they go running, which he does every day, that's what's it's part of it, he keeps it. You come back, no hot water. Wow. There's pigeons where they eat.
Do you want to tell me what barracks he's in, Anne?
No, I'm afraid not.
Okay, I understand that. And that's been the problem before, that army families who contacted us when we said, yes, we'd love to hear your voice, they worry them because the code in the army is very, very strict, and that's why it took. Now, I know Brigadier General Ahern has been campaigning for a long time publicly, but that's why it took. Cathal Berry had to speak out after he retired. I want to bring in a retired Sergeant Major Noel O'Callaghan, who's contacted us. Noel, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good, thanks. What do you think of what Brigadier General Ahern said, that the army is disintegrating?
Well, I'll ask you a question first, if I may. Did you vote last week?
Who are you talking to?
You. Did you vote last week, Joe?
Of course I always vote.
You
vote
radio.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Look, the reason why I asked that question, Joe, is that it's just I want to bring everyone back to the basics here. You the freedom to vote, freedom of movement and speech, is guaranteed in our constitution and a democracy. Yeah. That democracy is protected by an Garda Síochána Corner and the defence forces since we founded our state. The defence forces always in the background, though, in fairness. But the problem with it is, last night when you were asleep in your bed and your family, we had soldiers, defence forces personnel on land, sea and air for 24 hours who will receive 64 cents an hour into the hand for it. Now, you asked the question, is it about pay? Is it about?
Yeah.
It's about respect and loyalty. The pay that are, and the allowances and the contracts that our defence forces have are not fit for purpose.
Okay.
Last year, we lost 53 on average for every month of the year. Not counting officers. We lost about 700 last year. At the moment, he was correct in his article, we lost 425, not counting officers, in the first 4 months of this year. By the end of this year, we'll have lost 1,000 Defence Forces personnel. You now and your family are at risk. The democracy that we have served from the beginning of the state is at risk. And at a time when Europe is at risk and we have potential Brexit and all the other stuff that's coming on, our lads are being forced to leave the Defence Forces, forced, because they cannot afford to stay. Last month, 81 people left the Defence Forces. 14 of them were recruits.
Incredible.
So
Brigadier General, retired Gerard Ahern, his word disintegrating would seem to fit there, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The defense, the Department of Defense, the Commonwealth again has got its spawn with his article on 2 points. The Department of Defense have a stranglehold on defense forces that is sucking the lifeblood out of it. It's sucking the expertise and experience of personnel. Just to give you an idea, not counting the 81 that left last month, already this month, my own old unit has lost two sergeants with 21 years of experience each, a brother and a sister, because there's nothing there for them to stay on for.
Okay, now, Noel, you were a regimental sergeant major and you served 43 years and mostly in Mullingar. And we know that barracks was disbanded, wasn't it, as such?
Well, the barracks was closed in the failed reorg of 2012, again, driven by the Department of Defence and a political entity who had plenty of political flattery and complete political indifference.
Now, the last time we had a major discussion about the rates in the army and those allowances, as they're called, though 64 cent doesn't even deserve the word allowance, does it? But the last time we had it was when the papal visit last August, and we discovered through calls from army families that soldiers who were going to be on duty for much, much longer than any other security personnel over the period of the papal visit were being paid. They'd be working much, much longer, a lot of it outdoors, obviously, and a lot of it overnight, but they were being paid much, much less than other security forces, including the Gardaí. Now, I presume those allowances haven't changed, have they, Noel, as far as you know?
No, they haven't. And this is the very point. Since I left in 2017, I created respect and loyalty, because they're the two words that, for me, catch the essence of our defence forces. So, but since the crash came and we all took the hit and we all took it and we shared the pain, it's fine. The problem is, everything they took, did not give back. But they've used it to absolutely devastate the defence forces at the moment. We are in a position now where, as I was previously stated, ships can't put to sea. The chopper that went to Donegal with the water, that had to wait 4 hours to get a political okay.
Now that is an incredible story told by.
It's a true story, and you know what? It's one of many. Except you don't get to hear them.
So a fire. Let's hear that one in detail. A fire. There was a gorse fire in Donegal. The Air Corps, which I think that unit is actually based in Custune Barracks in Athlone. They have a capability of one of those attaching ancillary gear to a helicopter that can assist in fires, i.e., scoop water. People have seen them scoop water out of a lake. And the fire started and it took 4 hours from being asked to respond as a fire service. It took 4 hours for the Air Corps as a fire service. And by the way, they can, as we know, they can respond within seconds because they're on call down there all the time at Custune Barracks if there's a medical emergency. It took 4 hours because someone had to sign a bit of paper up in Newbridge in the Department of Defence headquarters.
Correct. The department have a complete stranglehold on it. And the problem with it is our Minister for Defence, who is Leo Varadkar, by the way.
I know that.
Leo Varadkar is our minister. And he is the leader of the defence forces. But with the privilege of leadership comes responsibility. And what our minister hasn't quite grasped yet is that he is responsible and he is accountable for the care of the troops under his command and their families. And that the problem is that our families and our lads who are serving cannot afford to live.
Okay.
We have soldiers travelling from Dublin to work in Donegal. You probably heard the stories. We have soldiers travelling from Donegal, Athlone, Dundalk to do duties in Dublin. But what you probably didn't hear is that we have personnel who travel from Dublin to do a week's duty in Cork. Because of the shortage of VOD officers.
Okay, let me bring, stay there, 51551 Joe at RT.ie. Commandant Cathal Berry. Cathal, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe, and good afternoon to your listeners.
And Brigadier General, I don't know whether you know each other, Brigadier General retired Gerard Hearn is on the line, and retired Regimental Sergeant Major Noel O'Callaghan also contacted us. Cathal, what reaction have you had to the piece on the front page of the Irish Times and indeed your interview in Morning Ireland this morning?
Just an unbelievable reaction, really, Joe. I've had some people phoning me actually crying, saying, finally, someone has articulated precisely what's happening in the Defence Forces. Text messages, I must have got about 1,000 text messages. I haven't even opened half of them. And people are just, I think they've just been lifted a little bit, and there's some semblance of hope now that this problem will be resolved, because the problem is so easy to resolve. I'm flabbergasted that it has gone on so long.
I'm not leaving because I hate the army, you wrote. I'm leaving because I love it. I just cannot sit back anymore and watch the Defence Forces being completely dismantled and demoralised before my eyes. That's Commandant Cathal Berry, who just retired. And the word added to that by retired Brigadier General Gerry Hearn is disintegrated, dismantled, demoralised. And if I meld the two of you together, it becomes dismantled, demoralised and disintegrating before our eyes. Cathal, what you say it's easily solved. Tell us how.
Well, as already mentioned this morning, there's a surplus of approximately 20 million returned to the central exchequer every year from the defence vote. That money could very easily be spent in solving this retention issue. Secondly, instead of spending approximately 15 million a year on excessive recruitment, just take half that sum and spend it on retention initiatives. Like, a basic requirement is to pay your staff. And thirdly, a very small increase in GDP spend on defence would make a huge difference. We have the lowest GDP spend in the entire European Union, of the EU 28. We are at the bottom of the class, and that tells you all you need to know.
About to spend. So Joe, yes, Joe. Who's that, Chair?
Chair Hearn.
Chair Hearn, yes. Go ahead, Chair.
Could I just intervene? And,
you can speak directly to each other.
We served in tough times in tough places together. Joe, and perhaps your listeners need to realise that uniquely in developed democracies, our Garda Síochána are double-hatted, being the police service of the state and the intelligence service of the state.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have an MI5 or an MI6. But also uniquely in developed democracies, the defence forces are also double-hatted. There are between 20 and 30 ring-fenced unique security services that only the defence forces supply to the state. I mentioned, for instance, the Queen's visit, President Donald Trump arriving.
Mm-hmm.
When we have the presidency of the European Union.
Yeah.
None of those events could take place without, for instance, the Air Defence Regiment of the Artillery Corps.
Okay. Yeah.
And ground to air missile systems.
Yeah, which will be around Shannon from next week.
The dedicated sniper teams from units and from the Army Ranger Wing.
Mm-hmm.
From explosive ordnance reconnaissance.
Yeah.
By the Engineering Corps. Explosive ordnance demolition by the Ordnance Corps. You have combat diving teams from the Army Ranger Wing. And I could go on. And they run between 20 to 30 ring-fenced, apart from the normal routine operational duties. And the last thing I would say, it's incredible that in 2020, we are again seeking a seat on the UN Security Council. And one of the central platforms of that is our contribution as a state since 1958 to international peace and security by the defence forces, while at the same time as the Department of Foreign Affairs are mounting this campaign, the defence forces is disintegrating at home. There is an utter disconnect.
It's pretty sobering stuff. Pretty sobering stuff. Cathal Berry, you mentioned in the piece in the Irish Times that you took off, you went away to study to become a doctor.
Correct.
Tell us about that, Cathal.
So there's a wonderful pathway or a wonderful scheme in the Defence Forces, because it is an excellent employer.
Okay.
The military side of the house is in very good order. It's the other side of the house is what's causing the problem. You can take an unpaid leave of absence or a career break to further your education. And when I came back from Chad, it was obvious that the medical backup that the Army Ranger Wing had was not where it could be or should be, and we were probably taking unnecessary risks if we came in contact with militias over in Chad. So, like any good officer, we have to take it upon ourselves to exercise our initiative. I had the points, I got a place in medical school, and then I put myself out there, got qualified as a doctor, and then I returned to Defence Forces as a medical officer.
Yeah, but Cathal, did you sacrifice 5 years' pay?
Correct.
Did you pay your own way in medical school?
I had to pay 75,000 of my own money. I had to get a bank loan to pay for tuition fees. Correct.
But hang on, Cathal, I know you did not ask this point to be made, and I'm just trying to put. And by the way, you didn't highlight that in the Irish Times about 75 grand of your own money. I know it was made on your own it was unpaid leave, but. The army are constantly saying we don't have a new doctor, we don't have enough doctors, and we can't attract medics to the defence forces. Here we have somebody like yourself, total 23 years in. I know it was before you retired, obviously. You just come back from commanding the Army Ranger Wing in Chad. That's some job, that's some responsibility, that's some risk, that's some danger, that's some experience. You came back. Why didn't the army say to you when you said, I presume you told me you want to become a doctor, why didn't the army rubbed their hands, the Department of Defence rubbed their hands with glee and say, Cathal, we'd pay for you to become a doctor.
And that case was made, but it was not recommended. Now,
be fair, you are fair.
The local authorities in the Curragh were excellent, and my colleagues were excellent, and any opportunity they got to exercise their discretion and give me a half day here or a full day off there, they provided it, because they understood that the overarching aim was to increase the number of medical officers in the Army. Now, if I could just mention one small thing, Joe, there is a bit of hope out there.
And
I would regard my retirement as just a temporary one. When the situation improves, and I believe it can only improve because the case is so compelling, I'm very happy to rejoin the Defence Forces, no problem at all. And I actually miss my colleagues already. I have the best colleagues you could possibly imagine.
Look, Cathal, just to be clear about this whole scenario where we have an experienced officer went in as in the cadet corps, the officer corps, experienced both in terms of education and experienced in terms of on-the-ground soldiering and commanding in Chad and other places, as well as head of the Army Ranger Wing. Are you saying you applied to the Department of Defence to say, I wish to study to become a doctor and I will stay in the army if I become a doctor? And they said, well, make your own way.
So I applied to the military chain of command,
and
it was recommended up to the generals in Newbridge.
Yeah.
They supported the case.
Okay.
And my understanding was it was declined by the civilian side. And like any
which
good
officer...
Which
is also the Department of Defence headquarters in Newbridge.
Correct. So, as I said, like any motivated officer, you get temporary setbacks, but that shouldn't, push you back. You identify a different approach to get to the same end point, and you power on. And that's what our troops expect from our military officers, that they take risks, that they put their bodies on the line, and they produce the goods in times of great crisis. And as a medical officer or a military officer, you're expected to be in the location where the need is greatest.
Okay.
And if there is a deficiency in a particular skill set, military officers are expected to exercise their initiative and fill those gaps. And that's why when we see such a solvable problem as the retention crisis in Defence Forces, we are absolutely bewildered. We're going, why can't this simple problem be solved? If you went down to the cadet school today and organised a group of 5 cadets and present the problem, they will solve it in an hour.
Okay, I take your point.
Joe, want to come in there?
I need to take a break because that's coming in. 51551 joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And joe@rt.ie. We're talking to retired Brigadier General Gerry Hearn, who contacted us, retired Regimental Sergeant Major Noel O'Callaghan, who contacted us about an article written by retired Commandant Cathal Berry. It's still, by the way, these are young men still. Cathal is and Noel and Gerry, I'm sure, are still in their prime, but Cathal retired after 23 years a few weeks ago from the army in desperation, not because he hated it, but because because he loved it, and he wrote it, and it was interviewed in the Irish Times, say, by Conor Lally, and it's a pretty devastating piece. D is the word, demoralisation, the army's being dismantled. Brigadier General Ahern said the army is disintegrating. I'll come back to those three men, those three soldiers in a second. I want to go to Fran Riley, who's contacted us from Wexford. Fran, you run the Irish Defence Forces Veterans Association.
No, I belong to the Irish Defence Forces Veterans Association. I am the communications officer to the Veterans News.
Okay, good stuff. Now,
good afternoon, John. On behalf of all veterans and all soldiers, PDF, for taking up this challenge.
And what do you think of what Commandant Berry and Brigadier General Ahern and Regimental Sergeant Major Noel O'Callaghan are all saying? They're all singing from the same hymn sheet, and they've exploded onto the national scene today with this anthem to save the army.
Well, first of all the people, Gerard, Noel, and they all have my admiration, because it's actually the Irish Defence Forces Veterans Association who gets stuff done for them. The men know they're all fighting, and it's funny that the pure soldier who's on the ground, mm-hmm. nobody was listening to. It's only when Commandant Berry had the guts and the balls, as the man says, to stand up now to wake up this government, because they keep going on about the guards. 70 recruits from the guards passed out. They said they're going to send or the Irish Army Defence, or they're going to send them to the border. When Brexit happens, which it will be, the border will be sealed.
By the army, primarily.
The only men on the ground, the troops that have been doing it for years and years and never got gratitude. Like, just an example of that, there's an exercise there a few weeks ago, and one of my friends was on the ground. He hadn't even got a rifle with an ammunition, and he was there for 24 hours and was lucky to be fed. And you talked about the Pope there coming in. Yeah. The best paid people will be on the ground would be security. Our lads are going on the ground probably for 4 or 5 days. I was going on the ground 2 days before or 3 days before anybody else. And it's so demoralising to see to go into a barrack. I was in the Curragh camp there once when I was boxing. There were 7 barracks, there's thousands of troops. I was called Spot the Soldier. It's all worked by cameras. No soldier at all. Go into any barracks, McKee Barracks, Collins Barracks, which was that, wasn't it? Cattlebrew Barracks. You don't see soldiers. You're lucky to see it. They're all gone, and no one cares.
And
Joe,
Fran, what do you see and others see in the Irish Defence Forces Veterans Association? Obviously, they come to you.
Okay, people come to us, and what we see, Joe, we see the demoralised soldier. We see the man that can't afford to bring his family out for a day out. Mm. We see the people going to money lenders. We see people out in the hospital and they're dying. One of our sponsors had to bring a woman soldier from the Isle of Man remains back because the family couldn't afford it. For everything. Mallins in Belfast paid for everything for this soldier to come back. Now, when we go in, it's funny, we work with the soldiers.
Yeah.
And we have great support by the PDF, by the officers and the men. Great support. We're only back from Norway from an exchange with the Irish. We brought them to the St. Paddy's Day Parade. But what we wanted to see is the Irish soldier to be respected. In every other country, they're respected. Here, they don't care. Oh, it's only the army. But when something happens, Joe, the postal strike, the bank strike, if you remember, the bus strike, anything, we're there. I know people say, oh, well, that's what they're there for. They're not. These people are on the ground. Some people don't get fed for 48 hours, 36 hours, whatever it is, fed, and they don't have the proper equipment. All we want is respect, as Noel Callaghan says, as Jared says. They see it. We're so 61. I'm 61 years of age. I don't consider myself, oh, no, years ago it was. But the people that we want, we just want respect for our soldiers and pride for when we go in to be welcome in, and the people, to give them what they're due. The Rangers were all given back pay 4 or 5 years back, and they still haven't received it. Our lads went in, as I said to you, they're not, they have the great equipment, they go to great countries and all, but we haven't got the backup. We haven't even got the backup of our people. Our people think that the Irish soldier is moaning. It's not. When something happens, Joe, and God forbid when it ever does, it'll be the Irish soldier on the ground. It won't be the guards. It won't be the guards. It'll be the soldier who's on the ground, the man that walks the beat. and the NCOs that look that will protect this country.
I see one communication there from a soldier saying, and I'm conscious that they can't speak out, and that's a real difficulty, though they can speak out through their representative organisations. But one of the soldiers saying he did 3 days on the papal visit in the Phoenix Park last August and got no extra money. 3 days in the open air. And I remember the weather on the Sunday, horrific. And on the Saturday night, Sunday morning. Cathal Berry, the Department of Defence in Newbridge, the civil service, so to speak, they're hardly the enemy within, are they?
Well, enemy would be a bit of a strong word. I suppose the military culture, our ethos is collaboration. We love working with external
agencies. So when you're talking, because you seemed, there's a common thread between the Brigadier General, the Regimental Sergeant Major, and yourself as a Commandant, and that seems to be the dead hand of the Department of Defence. How do you describe it when you're talking about it?
Well, first of all, we don't blame them. It's not their fault they have no expertise in military or security matters. It's not their fault there's no experience. The big issue is they're not willing to listen to the people who do have the experience, who do have the expertise, probably from an insecurity perspective, that they know that they won't be able to compete in a debate because people have a vast overseas trips under the belt.
Excuse me, sir, would you not agree that the Secretary General of the Department is the man that's the problem?
No, you can't. We're not going to personalise the friend.
No,
I don't want anyone. I don't want anyone identified.
Okay,
either. If I could say, Joe,
again, I agree with you entirely. Rather than individualising it, it's more of a cultural problem. For instance, there's 360 people in the civil service in the Department of Defence. The numbers are actually increasing in the Department of Defence. The problem is not a single one of those 360. To the very best of my knowledge, have previous military experience. And therein lies the problem. That, like, if you look at the UK Defence Minister at the moment, she is a serving, reservist naval officer, and she has huge credibility as a result. And the system is actually set up to fail. There are so many structural flaws in it. If I could just mention two quick points.
Yeah.
First of all, the Representative Association of Commissioned Officers, RACO, are actually before the Foreign Affairs, Trade and Defence Oversight Committee in the Dáil on Thursday. This is completely unprecedented. RACO had to request to go before the committee to lay out the absolute legitimate and justifiable grievances because they have tried approaching the matter through Newbridge, through the civilian side, and they're getting absolutely nowhere. And the last point I have is, we're constantly told in this country that those who get up early in the morning will be incentivised and rewarded. And I can say with a hand on heart, nobody gets up earlier than a soldier, and they've been completely exploited and forgotten about.
And that story you told about the gorse fire in Donegal, that it took 4 hours before the Air Corps was mobilised, is that correct?
Completely correct. I've spoken to the people who were actually involved. I know the crew who flew that mission. I've seen the photographs of the helicopter with the dust on it, with the ashes on it, covered in smoke as they washed it down. And they were listening to the media reports afterwards about how the Air Corps left down people of Donegal.
That's right, a number of politicians gave out about the Air Corps.
But the reality was, you know, the department fiddled while Donegal burned, and that is the reality. And unfortunately, like, nobody from the Department of Defence's PR team were on the radio. It was the Air Corps public relations officer that had to answer for the wider defence sector.
And Cathal, the other story you told you, our producer, earlier on about the permission to go on a hill march.
Exactly. So if I want to send 2 soldiers or 3 soldiers on a navigation exercise in Wicklow.
Yeah.
We have to get permission approximately 60 days in advance
from
the Department of Defence, from the Department of Defence Land Branch. Unbelievable stuff. Now, it's not always 60 days. If we train in Guiltalands, it's a little bit less. If we train in the Wicklow Mountains National Park, it's a little bit less. But if you want to use civilian lands, that is the level of stifling control and interference. An intrusion, not in every case, but that is in the majority of cases, and that's correct. So we can't
You have to get advance permission, I presume in writing, it has to go through some form of written communication, be it email, or whatever. It takes 60 days, We've had wars which last for 7 days, pretty significant wars that last for 7 days. We've had Hitler's attack. We won't get too florid in our comparison, but Hitler's blitzkrieg across Europe, which took about 14 days. You're saying to send three soldiers on a hill walk under your command, under your experience command, you have to apply to the Department of Defence at least 60 days in advance in writing.
Correct.
Paul Kelly,
if I want to give a tent, if a school writes to me and says I'd like to borrow an army tent for a function or a charity gig on a Wednesday afternoon.
Brilliant PR for the army, I've seen them.
The general in charge of 1,500 troops in the Curragh does not have that authority. He must apply to the Department of Defence for permission to release that tent. And that's the level of intrusion. That's the level of humiliation that the uniformed services are subjected to.
Who said North Korea earlier on? Who used that phrase that Newbridge sometimes is called North Korea, the level of bureaucracy and that you have to go through?
Yes, and like the amount of suppression of information. The reason we're having this direct discussion at the moment is all these problems have been pushed up through the civilian chain of command. They know precisely
what's
happening.
Okay.
But they're diluting and distorting the message. And when it gets to Leo Varadkar, who is the Minister for Defence, he's getting a warped message, and he doesn't understand the acute nature of the problems that are here. Because obviously, if you've a vested interest, if you've been a senior civil servant in the Department of Defence for the last years, you want to make sure that everything is fine. There's nothing to see here, Minister. Just continue to promote me, and we'll carry on as before.
Cathal, were you a bit hard on the Minister of State for Defence, Paul Keogh, TD, calling him an empty suit?
Well, that was only the second part of the sentence.
I know. You said he's a lovely man. I know that.
He is.
Which everyone
knows.
Nice man. Doesn't matter.
Well, the first thing I would say is, look, military people are very, very loyal to their superiors, and we have been for 8 years. But our people in this country are fully aware of that misguided loyalty and blind obedience gets this country in huge amounts of trouble. And there is a higher value called moral courage that the military people are expected to live by. And I'm answering for my moral courage today. If the Emperor has no clothes, it's my job to say it.
Paul Kelly, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
Ex-Army Sergeant, the whole family, a band of brothers served. So did your father, your grandfather, three generations, and now fourth generation, your three sons serving, one overseas in Syria, and we thank them and you for your service. What do you think of what Cathal Berry, retired Brigadier General Gerard Hearn and Regimental Sergeant Major Nola Callan have said here today?
Oh, I'm not one bit surprised. I've seen it. My three sons at the moment who are serving, Joe, that one is struggling to stay in. He's paying €1,000 a month's rent.
Uh-huh.
He got €5 of a pay rise. He's totally disgusted. He was talking to me.
€5?
€5. Well, after tax, Joe, €5 a week.
€5
a week. His partner that he's living with is struggling with work and trying to find a steady job. So he's trying to support her. And paying €1,000 a month, he's coming out with maximum €350 a week if he's lucky to get that. You know, so it leaves very little for food, very little for socialisation, and he's totally disgruntled. This guy has a trip overseas done.
Uh-huh.
He's been a poster boy for the On Cotton Tour.
Okay, the Army magazine, the official magazine of the Defence Forces,
yeah. I have one son serving in Syria at the moment, and he's paying a mortgage. He has one child. My eldest has two children, and luckily enough, his partner or his wife is actually a school teacher. But if she was unemployed, he wouldn't be able to pay his mortgage.
And you're saying
on family income supplement.
My God.
You know, like, the pay was never great in the army, but the morale was there. And we survived on it. We had. I started my career and I joined in 1984. I was a married man when I joined. Mm. And I got married quarters, which I was quite welcome to. and now all married quarters are gone. So we have to go out and rent outside, and the maximum or the minimum rent is €1,200 if you want to live comfortable with two children. So what do you do?
Well, Cathal Berry and indeed Gerard Hearn and all are all saying that the solution is relatively simple at this stage. I presume, Cathal, you're calling for... you're not calling for an inquiry because you say all this information is already there. You're calling for almost emergency action about the army, for the government, for the Taoiseach to stand up and say, listen, we have looked at the figures. We are looking at the figures. We have seen the diminution in the Air Corps. We have seen the diminution in higher ranks and the loss of brand new good recruits. It's incredible. And we will stand up and do something about it in double quick time. That's what you want, Cathal, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, the paralysis of analysis. We have been analysed to death. We have been reviewed to death. We know what the problems are. We just need action. And we have the means. We lack only the will. There's 20 million every year available.
The Department of Defence now are denying that, Cathal.
So, well, we know from a PQ that Jack Chambers, the defence spokesperson from Fianna Fáil, he received an answer, an official answer, approximately three to four weeks ago, that €92.3 million was returned from the Department of Defence to the Central Exchequer over the last 5 years. These are official facts.
Okay.
Official figures provided by the Department themselves.
Stay with us. More people want to participate on 51551 text and joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And 51551 is our text number. We're talking to retired Brigadier General, by the way, only retired in 2014, Gerard Hearn, retired Regimental Sergeant Major, retired again 18 months ago, served 43 years. Noel O'Callaghan, who contacted us, Commandant Cathal Berry, you would have heard him on Morning Ireland and read him in the Irish Times today. Harry Mulhern, retired Company Sergeant. Harry, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What do you think of what you're hearing from the other ranks here today?
Well, of course, I agree with everything that's been said by serving and ex-serving members. I served 25 years in the Defence Forces at senior rank.
Mm-hmm.
And here's one example now. I served in the early 70s in Nicosia at the...
Cyprus, yeah.
At the UN headquarters for the Middle East. I worked there for almost 12 months. And among others, I worked with British NCOs. And they had just completed a tour of duty with the British Department of Defence in London.
Okay.
And they told me that the role of the British Department of Defence was to get everything that was needed for the forces.
In other words, they're on the side. That's their job, to help.
That's their job. It is to get everything that is needed that they can for the soldier. Unfortunately, my experience in the Defence Forces and to the present day, my son's experience, is that the Department of Defence in Ireland, working hand in hand with the Department of Finance, do the opposite. Do the opposite.
They put a brake on what the army is looking for.
Everything is restricted. Cheapskating over the years. Equipment, uniforms, items they bought, the cheapest of the cheap. At one stage, Joe, let me give you this example. And could I say also that the Irish Defence Forces is the only one and only truly disciplined organisation in this country who's totally loyalty to the state. And a lot of them have given their lives in the course of that.
Mm-hmm.
At one stage, anyway, there was a fleet of cars bought. I won't mention the make,
okay,
but it was a fleet car. Anyway, it was sent back because they came with radios. The same as everyone buys a car now, there's a radio.
Radio, yes.
There was radios in it. Take them back, take the radios out.
Why?
Even though, by taking the radios out, it made no difference to the price of the vehicle.
But that was
an attitude, that was a mentality.
But why did he want the radio out?
They can't be having these luxuries.
What?
Yeah.
And no, what if they listen to Marty Whelan on Lyric FM, they might lose their will to fight for Ireland?
To serve their country.
It's nonsense.
It was seen in many ways. We have a general staff. They're good men. They've spent all of their lives in the army and the navy, etc. The air force, and they would do the right thing, but they can't because they are not allowed. The Secretary of Department of Defence describes himself as the chief of staff's boss. Now, it's an absolute disgrace, and they're just about to announce a pay increase for the army that wouldn't get you to the bingo every Monday night. It's an out-and-out disgrace.
I thought Cathal Berry made a very strong point there this morning on Morning Ireland. He said if this commission, which is due to report, and apparently he's reporting to the Cabinet in the next 2 weeks, if that commission had good news, it would have been released before the elections last Friday. That's why Cathal believes it's going to be
They know it's coming and it's going to be terrible bad news. They have nowhere to turn.
Okay, Cathal Berry, can I just ask you before we finish, about your job, you, as I say, through your own sacrifice and borrowing or whatever, 75,000, you became a doctor while you were in the army. You then became head of the medical school in the army. And in that role, you had to do exit interviews with a lot of the people who left. What is your overriding feeling about those exit interviews?
That's a very good question. My overriding feeling would be just the waste of potential. We have these people who are 10, 12, 15 years in the Defence Forces who have accumulated vast experience. They're veteran peacekeepers. They've been all over the world. They want to stay. They love their job, but they love their family more. And it's they're so torn and so tormented that the only way for them to stay in the military is to disadvantage their kids' education or... what's the best way of saying it would be to disadvantage their spouse's career, because spouses are suffering and children are suffering completely unnecessary. So to answer your question, a waste of potential and a complete unnecessary waste of potential.
Okay. We'll leave it there for the time being. Brigadier General.
The present Minister of our Defence has turned his back on protest by thousands of army families throughout this country over the past couple of years, turned his back and ignored them and showed them nothing but contempt. He ought to be ashamed of himself because he has no clue as to the service that these men give to their country.
Okay, well, I think a lot of people, I know people have been campaigning for years, but it's the powerful voices. I know Ger, Brigadier General Hearn has been out before, and I'm sure Noel O'Callaghan as well. But Brigadier General Hearn, Regimental Sergeant Major O'Callaghan, Commandant Berry, all retired. Thank you for your service, and likewise, Harry Mulhern, 51551.